Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Family Gamers. I am your host Andrew.
And I'm Anitra.
And this is episode number 53. As always, on our odd-numbered episodes, we get to have a guest on the show. This week we have Mark Spector. He is the owner-slash-executive extraordinaire for Grand Gamers Guild, who have the game Pocket Ops currently on Kickstarter. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I wanted to have you on the show because Pocket Ops is doing really, really well on Kickstarter right now, and our show is going to be released on Monday the 26th, which is the day that the Pocket Ops Kickstarter is scheduled to close. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Pocket Ops the game?
Sure. So Pocket Ops is a two-player only variation on tic-tac-toe. And yes, you heard me right. It is a variation on tic-tac-toe. And as a dad of three kids, we've been to many a restaurant and in many a spot where the kids go, hey, let's play tic-tac-toe. And you kind of sigh and roll your eyes and go, okay, let's do that. And with a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, I've played all the tic-tac-toe I've ever played in my life. And so when I initially entered the game, I was a little dismissive. And then I actually played and my mind was blown. It was awesome. And it really, as you know, some of the other reviewers and as anyone who I've sort of almost forced to sit down and play will tell you, you know, initially they say, wow, really? You're a publisher and you're publishing this? And then they play it and they go, oh my gosh, there's really a game here. And I go, yes. So that's Pocket Ops.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, we actually, I don't think it was the first time we played Pocket Ops, but one of the first times we played Pocket Ops, we actually brought it with us on a little date night. Just the two of us got a chance to get out without the kids, and so we figured that it would be a good game to bring to a restaurant table, and it really fit the bill.
Yeah, it was perfect. I love the fact that it's based on tic-tac-toe, and so the rules are incredibly intuitive to learn. It's basically tic-tac-toe plus two rules. And that is enough to make it a way more engaging game and one that is definitely not the same every time.
Sure. And to that end, I mean, I don't want to sort of let it hang with respect to tic-tac-toe frame of reference. There are two layers built upon the game, and you may have been leading up to this, but there are two layers built upon the game that make it into an actual game that that can't be solved, because you're actually playing against the person who's making decisions and sort of thwarting your plans. So those two things are the prediction cards or the blueprint cards, wherein if you predict where your opponent is going to go, they don't get to keep their piece on the board. And then on top of that, you have specialists, which you have to use one per match in a best two of three. And they do all sorts of different things. So you could end up in a situation where you have two of the same specialists or two different specialists, and like you said, it's a little different every time.
Yeah, it definitely is.
So I'm taking a look at the Kickstarter right now, and it looks like you guys are doing super well. So the Kickstarter is scheduled to close tomorrow or today for anybody who's downloading this and listening to it right away, and it looks like you are through almost all of your stretch goals at this point. So there's additional illustrations. At this point, most of the I think all of the basic spies are getting screen printed, and all the specialists are getting screen printed onto the little tokens. So, you guys are doing really well with the Kickstarter right now.
Yeah, you know, it's a little game, and we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, some little games really go crazy, and some people kind of shrug their shoulders, you don't know, and we set a modest goal, sort of my company philosophy, that if I'm going to ask you fine folks out there to support me, come to the table with at least half of what I need. I feel like that's just my obligation. You know, I shouldn't personally be dependent upon the audience of Kickstarter game backers entirely to bring the dream to fruition. And so we set the goal at $5,000. We're currently just shy of $20,000, and if you'd asked me a week ago if I thought we were going to make the top goal that we had to put out there, which was $18,000, I was skeptical, hopeful but skeptical. And this morning I woke up. We had blown through that by quite a decent margin. And now we're, you know, we're almost to a $20,000 goal that we've added on, and we've been, we'll be adding in yet another special piece called the mole if we hit $22,000.
Cool. It sounds like we're getting a little bit of call distortion, but I think we'll power through it and see how we do. So apologies to anybody listening, but we're doing the best that we can. So you alluded a little bit to kind of the mission or the policies of your company, Grand Gamers Guild. Can you talk a little bit more about that and kind of what you're doing as a company and what your vision is or your mission?
Sure. So yeah, I spoke about how we approach Kickstarter. I feel pretty strongly about that in terms of the way we approach it. Beyond that, as a company trying to gain an identity in a market that we are all very glad is growing larger and larger, basically we have done a bunch of small games. And so the question, and actually let me interrupt myself. So we have Unreal Estate, which I actually just finished fulfillment on this week. Now we're in the middle of putting out what I refer to as fulfillment fires, just damaged components, damaged boxes, missing things, whatever the case may be. And then I published another game called Stroop through more traditional means. That is to say, I didn't take it to Kickstarter, but because of the success of Unreal Estate, and again, my personal philosophies, I just went directly to print. And I printed that right alongside Unreal Estate, and they were shipped to the United States simultaneously and then fulfilled simultaneously. And then, of course, Pocket Ops is both physically and in terms of complexity an even smaller game. But that is not what our intention is. We're not going to be a small games company. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm pretty much an omni-gamer in the sense that I'll play just about anything. New games and games that I've already played, even if I don't particularly care for a game, I find that the tabletop experience is defined more for me by the people around the table than the game itself. So even a game that might have been a slog in a previous play could still be fun. Anyway, looking towards the future, I have two other games that are coming along. We are not, even though we started with three smaller games, we do not intend to be a small games company. We're casting our net a little larger and are going to be doing two games, Colonies of Venus, as well as Endangered. Colonies of Venus is a dice placement game in the spirit of Alien Frontiers of Kingsburg, where you are colonizing the planet, managing your resources, going on expeditions, building buildings, and over a series of rounds, the player who has the executed the best colony at the end wins. Colonies of Venus is a working title. We're 99% certain we're going to change it. To exactly what, though, I'm not sure. And then after that, we'll be doing Endangered, which is a cooperative game where you play as environmentalists trying to save an endangered species. It's a scenario-based game in the sense that we have multiple scenarios, a couple fully developed, a few still under development, where you are either focusing on tigers or sea otters. And obviously those are two very different species. One is land, one is water. They behave differently in the wild. They, in terms of territoriality, in terms of breeding behaviors. And so the mechanics of each scenario are trying to reflect that as best as possible. But essentially your goal as conservationists is to work through bureaucracy and try to persuade UN ambassadors to enact legislation to save the animals and their territory. And as games go, you know, it is a particularly sensitive topic. I'm not a you know, diehard environmentalist, but I do believe that saving our environment and saving a living species is important. And so we're being very careful about how we approach that in terms of wanting to bring a very full-bodied experience in terms of graphic design and art and the whole nine yards.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's you know, when we started out, I try to surround myself with people who know more than I do, and I am more than happy to be the dumbest person in the room. That's totally fine. And through the first experience with Unreal Estate, really the goal was to get a game under my belt. And that's not to say that Unreal Estate is not a fantastic experience. It is. But in terms of games, it's a smaller game. It's a card game. And it has some bits in it, but not a
huge amount of moving parts. In fact, I think one of the best compliments that I've been given about the game is that there's actually a decent amount of complexity under a relatively small amount of components. But when you move up into larger box games, experiences that last 60 to 90 minutes and have more bits, more tiles, a full-on board and the whole nine yards, basically what I'm getting at is I want to make sure I could get a smaller game right before I added on the logistical weight of doing a more complex product. And I think we've accomplished that. The compliments coming in from the backers on Unreal Estate have been almost 100% positive.
So I'm actually looking at Unreal Estate right now, and it looks really cool. So you just said you said before that you're pretty much wrapping up fulfillment on this game now. Is this game available for purchase anywhere?
Yeah, it is. That is to say, at the moment, we're in the process of getting it onto the actual website, so you can click and buy and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We've had a few people reach out who are interested in purchasing both Unreal Estate and Stroop. And my message to them thus far has been, hey, you know, send me an email to, I'll just say it right now, team@grandgamersguild.com. And, you know, we can work out a situation where you send me a PayPal payment and I just kick the game out to you. But we'll have a more formal store on our website, looking towards mid-July. We actually had come to fruition three gigantic things all at once. And not that it wasn't on purpose. But it has delayed the execution of an online store. So what I mean by that is we actually fulfilled Unreal Estate, went to Origins, and had Pocket Ops as an ongoing campaign simultaneously.
Oh, no big deal.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, and again, that was all by design. You know, it was our first big show. I've been to Origins. This was my 13th year at Origins, but it was my first year as an exhibitor. Mm-hmm. Basically, Unreal Estate and Stroop got to my home just before that. And so we were able to leverage our presence at Origins to deliver to the backers some of the product. And of course, that saves on shipping and allows me to shake their hand and say thank you face to face.
Right.
Sure.
And then, of course, we leveraged our presence at Origins to let people know about Pocket Ops, which I think had an enormous impact. Because again, it's the kind of game where if I say to you, it's based on a tic-tac-toe framework. I mean, I've sat with people and I've seen them roll their eyes and their shoulders slump and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to play this. So when I can sit them down and have them play, I mean, many of the reviewers who did reviews for our campaign said, I was really disappointed when I first saw what this was, but then I played.
Right.
And that is exactly, it's like, bam, you know, you're just hit upside the head and you say, wow, I see why this is being published by a publisher now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And one thing I think that's worth mentioning is we'll talk about the cost of the game right now. So it's pretty inexpensive. It's $14 for a copy of the game with all stretch goals. And with that, you would also get the Kickstarter exclusive Doomsday Device lapel pin. And that is including free shipping in the United States, and then it's a little bit of extra shipping, $5 to Canada and $10 everywhere else. So it's a pretty inexpensive game. And you were talking before about how you don't have a web store yet for Stroop or Unreal Estate, but you do have backer tiers that include one or both of those games.
That is totally true. Yep, because again, you know, a lot of people find out about games after the Kickstarter is over, and Stroop didn't go through a Kickstarter process. We wanted to basically just allow that channel. It seemed to make sense.
Right.
And can I go back for just a second?
You can. You had more, asked, more than welcome to.
you had asked me about company approach and philosophy. Mm-hmm. And one other thing that we plan on doing and we hope we're accomplishing is injecting a little bit of mischief into our games. And so basically what I'll say is that if you look through our games, you know, check them out with maybe a little bit more care than you might otherwise do as you're undoing the shrink wrap and digging into the game, you might find some things that are hidden. In fact, quite specifically, I'll just flat out tell you, we did do a little online game puzzle type quest for Unreal Estate. If owners of the game are careful and look, they will find a web address hidden in the product that will take them to some fun stuff. And basically, we hope to inject that mischief into everything we do. from our mascot, who is a hooded, mysterious-looking female figure, to the actual physicality of the products themselves and, you know, what you're getting in the box, or rather, I should say, what you expect to get in the box versus what you get in the box.
Hmm. One thing I think is also pretty interesting is that you have made available, it looks like a lot of, you've made available a lot of art on the Grand Gamer Guild website, and it looks like a lot of this probably comes from Unreal Estate.
Yeah.
This art is great. I like it. I'm kind of imagining some of these hanging in my office right now.
Sure. So what I will say is that, and again, you know, bringing together people whose skills and talents represent themselves in areas that I don't have, I actually, Corinne Artist, who is the artist on Unreal Estate, known her for a couple of years through a convention that I used to run. And when Jason Slingerland, the designer of Unreal Estate, first presented his prototype to me, he had, it had a very, you know, the buildings were the same in the sense that it was a game about matching sets of buildings. And we discussed what if we could get Corinne to do the art. And we made it into fantasy buildings. And Jason's familiar with Corinne. He'd been to my convention. And basically he said, if you can get Corinne to do this, I'm all over that. So within 24 hours, I'd spoken to Corinne and she indicated to me that I'd caught her at just the right time. And therefore, you know, she took on the project and boom, there you have it. I mean, you're looking right at it. Another thing that we did for both the project as well as for Corinne, as well as for a little bit of, call it a vanity project, for myself, is we did an art book with the game called The Art of Unreal Estate. And because Corinne is my friend, she agreed. No, let me go in a different way with this. So, cause I'm putting the cart before the horse. Corinne actually did two proof of concept sketches with every building that we had in the game. And then the team on Unreal Estate got the opportunity to pick which one would be watercolored into the final product. But you have to imagine, looking at what you're looking at, that the ones we didn't choose, they might not have been as amazing as the ones that got in the game, but they're not more than half a step off. And at the end of the day, art is all subjective, right? So I'm sure there's some people who will look and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they didn't choose this one. Anyway, point is that we actually created a book alongside the game called The Art of Unreal Estate, and because Corinne is my friend, she allowed us to publish in that book all of the pencil sketches that were done. And so for anyone who is an art enthusiast or who is a Corinne enthusiast, if you pick up the book, it's basically you get an enlarged watercolor of the finished product, and then you get to see all the concept sketches that went into it. So the alternate airship and the alternate orc outpost, and so on and so forth. So it's really, really cool. It was something that I was really proud to do. And while it didn't resonate with the gaming audience as much as I'd hoped it would, you know, I'm still really proud to have produced the book and yeah, so that exists. That's a thing too, that people can purchase if, they're so inclined.
So how do they get a hold of that book? Because I'm looking for it.
Sure. Well, at the moment, it would be emailing me and then, you know, arranging a PayPal deal. Mm-hmm. But that, too, will be on the store.
Awesome.
You can also, I believe, oh, my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of the service. But we did create on one of those, and if you're poking around on my website, you'll probably find it.
I think you're talking about ImageKind.
Yes, ImageKind. Thank you. You can actually, if there is a particular print that you love, we've produced those images over on ImageKind, and you can actually go and purchase any of them, to hang in your home and have permanently forever. Other people have taken the book, and they actually take an X-Acto knife to it and cut it right out and plan to frame it themselves.
I have the same reaction to that I do when I play Pandemic Legacy.
You see the look of horror on your face.
Well, I have to admit, and as much as I love games, I also love books. And there is a part of my soul that gets destroyed when I think of someone taking an X-Acto knife to the integrity of the entire finished book product. But at the end of the day, it's theirs to do with what they wish. We did receive a lot of feedback from folks during the campaign. Hey, I don't really have much use for a book. What about a print? Well, now you can turn the book into a print. You can go to ImageKind and get prints. You can, yeah, it's all available to you.
Right. Fair enough.
No judgment, but I'll be deeply and emotionally wounded. <about that.
laughs> Not a problem.
So I guess you've kind of preempted my what's next for Grand Gamers Guild.
Oh, sure, sorry.
Talking about Colonies of Venus and Endangered. No, that's perfectly okay. So I guess, do you have any more questions, dear?
How have you managed to connect up with all these different designers and artists and...
Sure, so...
inquiring minds want to know.
Absolutely. So there's a... So with respect to Jason, there's kind of a funny story. Jason Slingerland does a podcast called Building the Game, and he had been talking about one game that he had been pitching that had been both then picked up and handed back to him by two publishers. I had mentally been toying with the idea of publishing for a while, and I was in my car, and I stopped the podcast, and I called him, and I said, dude, I'll publish your game. And then we met a couple times and eventually came to an agreement. Corinne, I mentioned I had met as a result of the convention I was involved with. Chris Kirkman, who did graphic design for me for Unreal Estate, I've known probably for about a decade, because one of the other things I do in this gaming life is I team leader of a convention team called the Grand Gaming Academy. And we demo games for publishers large and small at both Origins, Gen Con, and some other smaller conventions. So we've been demoing Dice Hate Me games pretty much since Dice Hate Me games began. And then the designers, Stroop, Jonathan Schaffer, is a personal friend and pretty much local. I could almost walk to his house. And so we sat down and discussed a few designs. And then I remember we were sitting at the table, the lunch table, and I specifically told him, you know, hey, I did a card game. I'm not really looking to move on to another card game. But he pulled out Stroop, and again, it was a mind-blown situation. And actually, let me take a minute to give Stroop a little bit of extra love, because, you know, it's the game that didn't get a Kickstarter, right? And so it doesn't get that extra little publicity bump. But Stroop is an absolutely clever, whip-smart game by Jonathan that is based on the Stroop effect, which is an actual thing. It's kind of a mental hiccup when your brain tries to reconcile what you're seeing. For instance, when the word red is written in the color blue. And your brain goes, wait, what's going on there? And it's a real-time game where you race to get rid of all of your cards based on the Stroop effect over two rounds. In one round, the word on the table describes the word that you play, and in the second round, you're trying to describe the word on the table. It's a game that I didn't kickstart, partly again because of my philosophy, but partly also because I found it, as you may be experiencing, very difficult to convey what the game is. And so I didn't really want to embrace that challenge in quite the way I did with Unreal Estate and now Pocket Ops. It's a game that shows better than tells, and that totally played itself out at Origins. It was, you know, many people came over and said, what the heck is this thing? And then they played it, and more than one person said, I don't buy games the first time I play them, but I want this game. And then they went away with it. So that was awesome. So again, that's how I met Jonathan. And then Brandon Barron is the designer of Pocket Ops, and Daniel Rocky and Daryl Chow are the designers of Colonies of Venus, and Joe Hopkins is the designer of Endangered. And I actually met each one of them at Protospiel Ann Arbor in July of last year. And it was funny, I hadn't even made the connection that a friend of mine pointed out to me that I actually signed every game that I engaged at that convention, that game day, last year, which I was like, oh wow, that's really true. And then of course, Josh Capel, is a personal friend, that I met through, my convention, and, I've hung out with both him and his wife, Helena, who is the woman behind Kids Table Board Gaming. We've become close, and when I had the vision for Pocket Ops, I've known Josh's style because I've played a number of games he's done, or had a hand in is probably a better way to say. He's been a designer, an artist, and a graphic designer on more projects than anyone realizes. In fact, what I have said to most people is that if you probably point to your gaming shelves, or any given shelf on your gaming shelf, there's probably a game in there he had a hand in.
Did he do the art for Scoville?
Yes, he is the artist on Scoville, absolutely. And he is very clever, and he's a friend. He is sort of like my lead playtester and developer, as well as artist and graphic designer, and his name and influence is going to be prominent on, you know, most of my projects going forward.
Cool. Yeah, we actually have Problem Picnic from Kids Table.
Yeah, there you go.
That we'll be doing a review on in the next
month
or
weeks,
probably. So
that's awesome. I was actually going to, I mean, given the bent of your podcast, I was going to mention Helena to you. So
already talked.
Excellent. Okay. I will also take a moment to plug the very first ever Unpub Midwest. If you're familiar with Unpub conventions, Daryl Louder picked up the reins on that a few years ago and has been running Unpub in the Baltimore area now. They just had Unpub 7. And so I contacted Daryl and I said, hey, what about Unpub Midwest? And he said, you know how to run a convention. Let's do it. So in early November, we'll be doing Unpub Midwest. And I have to admit, it's also a little bit selfish because it was one of those situations where, I mean, I'm happy to travel to designers, but if I can bring, 30 designers to me, hey, that's all the better. So I have my thumb in many pies insofar as this gaming thing is concerned. I still organize the Grand Gaming Academy. I'll be spearheading on Pub Midwest, of course, and Grand Gamers Guild. So I got a lot of balls juggling in the air.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. And somehow you've still managed to find 30 minutes to sit down with us, so I appreciate that very much.
Hey, man, you guys have done me a huge favor. I appreciate it beyond words.
So, all right. I think we should wrap up. Oh, another $50 on the Kickstarter while we've been talking.
Yay! I'll tell you what. I had made a comment on – sorry, I know you just said we should wrap up. I had made a comment on Facebook last night, and I basically had said, something like, if we can hit 18 tomorrow, that will be a great platform for the last 48 hours. And this train just keeps on going. I mean, it zoomed out of the station this morning. And, it's been an extraordinary day. And again, there will still be people who pick it up yet tomorrow. So exciting stuff.
Absolutely. I don't disagree at all. It's definitely a great little game to throw in a purse or in a bag and bring kind of wherever you're going.
Yep.
Yeah. In fact, enjoy. Oh my gosh, his name is escaping me right now. Grim Tales. James Hudson actually took a picture of playing the game on an airplane tray table.
Yep.
That
works.
That makes sense. Yep.
We had James on the show about a month and a half ago.
Yep, we did.
So. Yeah, he's that actually seems like a really perfect place to play this game.
Indeed.
All right, well, he is Mark Spector. He is I'll call you the Grand Poobah of Grand Gamer Guild.
Sounds good.
And his game Pocket Ops is on Kickstarter through tomorrow. So if you go to thefamilygamers.com/PocketOps, you will see that. And yes, as Anitra is reminding me, when you are listening to this, it is through today. So make sure you get over to that and check it out. Just $14 for the game, including shipping, which is awesome.
Totally worth it.
So thanks so much, Mark, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Have a good day. Mark's a super nice guy.
Yeah, and Pocket Ops was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I remember bringing that to our little date night. That was adorable and kind of a little silly.
And really dorky.
Really dorky. Super dorky. I mean, we went to a coffee house that was having a Scrabble night, and we were the dorks.
Yeah. Because we weren't playing Scrabble like everybody else.
Well, anyway, that is episode 53 of the Family Gamers podcast. As always, you can check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe there, and please leave us a review.
Please, please, please. Pretty please.
You can also find us on Twitter at
Family Gamers AA.
Instagram at Family Gamers AA. You can email us.
Anitra at the Family Gamers.
Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
You can find us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA or our group.
Facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
It's not that hard to find. As always, head over to thefamilygamers.com. We are releasing today our review for the game Pirate Ships by the Haywire Group.
It's a great game for kids.
It's a grr. No, that's Tony the Tiger. That's not a pirate.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
Much better.
All right. Until next week, play games with your kids.